Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is LSEC Radio. I am your host, Teresa Banks, and I am talking today about the Trayvon Martin case. Now, what I'd like to do is talk to you first off about the facts that I have heard in regards to the case. And by no means am I saying these are 100% accurate. You know how you think. You know what the situation is, and maybe you've heard about the case, whether it be across the internet or on the news or through, you know, like the internet, like Wikipedia, per se. So I'm giving you the facts as I believe they've been presented and what I think they are. And also I'm going to give you my take in regards to this case, and then I'll wrap things up. And I want to also apologize because if your speakers are pretty sensitive, then you may be hearing my next-door neighbor cutting some grass at periods of the discussion today. So if you hear that, just ignore it, and hopefully he'll be done pretty quick. Now, in regards to the Trayvon Martin case, let me just start off with some of the facts as I know them to be. And my understanding is, while walking to a family member's house from a convenience store in Florida, a 17-year-old African-American named Trayvon Martin was killed on February 26th of this year of 2012. He was said to have been carrying some iced tea and some Skittles, with the iced tea brand being Arizona Tea. Now, I saw a police video, and I saw that within the video, while he was at the convenience store, he was wearing a hoodie. His mom's name is Sabrina Fulton. His father's name is Tracy Martin. And it was actually his father that reported him as missing on February 27th. And my understanding is that the day of the killing, he didn't have any kind of identification on him, so that when they took him to the morgue, he was simply labeled as John Doe. Now, after the killing of Trayvon, there was this huge outrage that came about. There were hoodie marches, as they were called, across various states. And I know here in my Chicagoland area, we saw the marches. Even out here in my small suburb, there were probably 6 or 7 young people I saw with hoodies pulled over their heads and carrying signs saying, "I am Trayvon," were marching up and down the street on behalf of the cause. And the outrage was from the fact that there was no arrest immediately of the shooter, George Zimmerman. And, of course, I think most of us find that interesting. How can you kill someone and not be brought into custody right away? But such was the case in this instance. Now, George Zimmerman is 28 years old, Hispanic origin, and supposedly he wasn't arrested. And a part of that may have had to do with the stand your ground laws in Florida, where you can protect yourself even with gun violence as a result of this particular law. Now, George had been following Trayvon in an area of Florida called Sanford, and I understand it to be a gated community. He was a part of a neighborhood watch group, and he would check the area often, and he found this young man to be suspicious and that he was following him around. At one point, he called 911. Trayvon was on the line at another point with his girlfriend during this whole situation, and even though the operator had instructed him to stop following Trayvon, he still did it. And as we know the story to be, as it unfortunately turned out, he wound up killing Trayvon, and he said it was all in self-defense. Now, it took special prosecutors to come on the scene and charge him not until April 11th of this year with second-degree murder, where if he's convicted, he could get a life sentence. He did post bail. He was bonded out. And on June 2nd, arrested again for this same case because supposedly through his PayPal account he set up through his website, where if you go to it, it says something about "I am the real George Zimmerman." He was able to get quite a few dollars, a good sum of money that was not all the way reported to the judge. So they arrested him again on June 2nd. So what I want to do today is give you my take on this whole case. And I actually have 6 quick bullet items that I want to talk briefly about. And I ask that you hear me all the way out as I go through each bullet point, because I think if you hear them individually, it may kind of get on your nerves a bit. So give me a chance to get to my point here as I list off my little bullet point items. And again, there's 6 of them, with the first one being that the way we dress does leave an impression on people. We tend to think that we can dress any kind of way and that it should be fine, when the truth of the matter is it isn't. If I left the house right now and I had on some skin-tight shorts, where if I bend it over, you could see my underwear, probably wouldn't be thongs, but anyway, you'd be able to see them. And if I had on a blouse where I didn't have a bra on and my breasts were hanging out, that will form an impression in your mind. Some people may say, "Look at this girl. She is quite fashionable." Some other people may say, "Look at her. She looks like she is selling her body and probably a prostitute." And we do the same thing with our young men and our older men. If we see them with baggy pants on, a colored hat, a scarf of some kind of a different color, their hats cocked to a particular angle, we form an opinion about who we may think they are. Although I have to admit, ever since I heard a pastor recently, my opinion forming has been a little bit different with our young people and their sagging pants. He relayed in his sermon one particular day that when our young people come to church, and although their pants are sagging, they may be wearing their Sean John pants, blue jeans, and maybe a $200 or $300 shirt, and we not realize this sometimes, but in their head, they are dressed to the nines to honor God. So after hearing that sermon, okay, I'll admit to you that my opinion about young people and the way they dress sometimes has been reshaped. But my point is that we need to stop pretending that our appearance does not matter. The second point out of the six that I want to make today is that regardless of how we look, it does not give someone permission to verbally or physically abuse us. It doesn't matter if we're dressed as I just described a few minutes ago. If a person feels you're truly doing something wrong, they should call the police and stand down. I watch my neighborhood. I'm not officially a part of a neighborhood watch, but on any given day, I'll be peeking out the window. I may take an extra drive around the block or two to see what's going on, and baby, I will report something in a heartbeat. I mean, not so much where the police probably know my name and address, but enough where my neighbors should know that they are protected. And they may not know. They may not realize I may be the one doing all the dialing sometimes, but I do watch. But regardless of my watching, I'm not taking the law into my own hands and addressing that person directly. So we need to stop doing that. The third point I need to make today is that the police need to consistently do their job. And I put an emphasis and a super stress on the word consistently. I think all of us are exhausted at different rules being applied to different people at different times. If you have killed someone, you are identified as the killer, you need to go to jail. And then let's do some investigating. Let's follow police officers. The same rules for everyone, always. And when bad cops are discovered to be such, let's remove them from the force. Why are they still on the force? If they've arrested a number of people under false pretenses, planted evidence, you know who they are, remove them from the force. Once you've done that, we as a society can now trust the police. A part of the Trayvon Martin drama we see is because we don't trust the police. The fourth point I want to make is that the public needs to learn when and how to calm down. I don't have an issue if you want to protest. In fact, I wanted to put on a hoodie myself and join a lot of the hoodie marches that I've seen and the rallies that I've seen. We have a right to be upset when things bother us. And I truly understand why people get pissed off. I've had some DWB experiences, some driving while black experiences. I've had them as well, walking while black. I can feel the pain in regards to that. But we need to be responsible in the way that we act when situations occur. It was irresponsible of the group that made the decision to put a bounty on the killer's head. It was irresponsible of the individuals that made the decision to place his address out there, to tweet it and make it public, to place his phone number out there, to tweet it and make it public. And, oh, by the way, the wrong phone number was placed out there. The wrong address was placed out there, and the wrong people were harassed. We need to realize as adults that our young people are watching us. They're always watching us. And we need to show them the proper ways of problem solving, which means to bring issues to light and to fix our systems that are broken so that there will be a reduced repeat, hopefully an elimination of a repeat of situations that are mishandled. Fifth point I want to make is that we need to continue working with one another in such a way that racial tensions are prevented. There was so much focus in this case with a Hispanic man that killed a black teen. So much focus on that. Well, I'll tell you what, as I watched television, as I watched the news, as I saw the marches, I saw black people out there, I saw white people out there, Hispanics, Asians, I saw people out there of all races that were frustrated. Let's stop turning every issue into a racial issue and start loving each other more. And again, to my other point, realizing when things are an issue actually with the system and to fix them accordingly. Because what pisses me off is when we get this upset of a Hispanic versus a black situation when there is black on black crime almost every day. And I don't see one-tenth of the anger that I see over this situation. I don't see one-tenth of the protesting, one-tenth of the tweeting, and people getting mad and holding signs and marching. I don't see one-tenth of that when there is a black-on-black crime situation. We should be mad all of the time, regardless of who has hurt our young people. And then the last point that I want to make in regards to my take on this, my sixth point, is we need to realize that our jury is going to be challenged in trying to reach a verdict over this case and not be mad in the long run with what they have to decide, because we have an imperfect system. And our poor jury, I don't know if you're like me and you've ever served on a jury, but you're sitting up there, you've got 1,000 questions in your head as you're listening to these cases, and you can't ask one question as you're sitting there in that jury box. All you can do is listen, and you are at the mercy of one lawyer against another trying to prove the innocence of the person that they're serving versus the deceased. And you're trying to make the proper decision. And in my head, that's why I could never give someone that ultimate punishment where they are put to death, because I will never know if what I received as the jury is based on truthful information or not. I'm going to take a quick break, and when I come back, I'm going to wrap things up. And there's a short story I want to tell you and a little poem I want to read. And I hope that both of them leave an impression. I'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is LSEC Radio. I'm your host, Teresa Banks, and I've been talking today about the Trayvon Martin case. And I know that there are periods of my conversation today where I've gotten heated because I tell you, this is just a situation that is upsetting. It's just really upsetting in so many ways. The death of a young person, someone taking the law into their own hands, officers not following the law and arresting a person quickly, and just the whole thing, everything, the way that everything is rolling out, as well as the Black Panthers, that's the group I was speaking of earlier that set the bounty to a number of individuals I've heard about that's done the tweeting. There's just a whole lot of ugliness in regards to this case. And it's really going to be interesting, I think, in the long run to see how things pan out. And I think most of us are going to keep watching. I said before the break there's a short story that I wanted to share, and I'm going to do so now. And then I'm going to close things with a poem that I found in my NIV version of the Bible I want to read to you. In regards to the short story, it has to do with a funeral that I went to. It was out of respect for a girlfriend, and the funeral was for her son. Her son was a teenager, and he was shot and killed after going to high school as he was coming out of a school event, as he was walking across a schoolyard. The shooter is still at large. Shooter has not been identified, hasn't been located, but meanwhile, my girlfriend is suffering. And I go to this funeral and I'm looking at this young person, and I have to tell you, it's awkward. I'm looking at him and he's suited up in his black suit and he's laying there motionless and he's in a casket and he's 18. And I'm thinking to myself, he should be sitting in the kitchen with his mother and enjoying something she just removed from the oven and saying, "Mama, I love your cooking." I'm thinking to myself that he should be getting ready for prom. He should be thinking about which college he's going to attend. He should be preparing for a date with a girlfriend that he likes. I'm thinking to myself, he should be alive. He should be alive. Why is this teenager laying here and he is not dead from an ailment of a serious disease? Why is he laying here? Because he was shot by someone so ignorant to have pulled the trigger, to have taken his young life without thinking, to have taken his young life without thinking. I don't understand it. And for those of us that are left over, as we're going through these neighborhoods, we're tired. Are you tired? I know I'm tired. I'm tired of passing the signs that say we miss you. I'm tired of looking at the dirty teddy bears that have been sitting on the side of the road for days and weeks from the passing of a young person. I'm tired of the RIPs that I'm seeing. I'm tired of the balloons and the candles and the crosses and the killings of our young people. I'm tired. Are you tired? Well, you need to be. You need to be more involved in helping our young people, directing our young people, and talking with folk like George Zimmerman, like fixing our system and getting things in better order, because right now we are all totally out of order. And I hope that something I have said today will place an impression. I hope that the death of Trayvon will continue to spark interest to the point that we're not mad, but we are doing something to fix this. Because until we do, we will keep hearing on the news night after night a repeat of this same cycle. And what I would ask you then is, what does it take for you to make a difference? What does it take? Does it have to be your family member, your friend? Do you have to be standing there like I was at the friend's child funeral, saying to yourself why, and thinking where else this child should be? I hope if anything comes out of the Trayvon Martin situation, I hope it's that we not say to ourselves, look at this Hispanic man that has killed this black man and this case that is not turning out the way it should, and here is another travesty against black people. I hope we will say, we need to do something to fix this, so that when people commit a wrong, it is addressed accordingly. And so that the next time around, when there are situations where we can act a little differently, that if we don't use something like stand your ground, that we make a different decision. Now, before I go today, as I said, there's a short poem I want to read to you. This is out of my Women's Devotional Bible, and as I said, the NIV version, the New International Version. It's called Rejoice, and it's by a woman named Helen Lowry Marshall. I'm going to read it, tell you how you can reach me next, and then I'm going to close and get some water and pray. What the poem says is, each day, upon my daily round, I find myself on holy ground. The morning glories on my fence inspire quiet reverence. Just one small tender seedling grew, and now this miracle in blue, a robin in the apple tree sings out his glad doxology. I hear the pure, unsullied joy of laughter from a little boy. I bow before the firm belief and faith of one who lives with grief. I watch a jet plane skim the skies and marvel at man's enterprise. I look up on a field of wheat and thank God for the bread we eat. I watch the vindictive rain on low-bowed heads of flour and grain. A friend drops in, a neighbor calls. The lamps are lit, night gently falls. Contentment settles with the sun in labors of the day well done. So many little altars there, so many simple calls to prayer, so many reasons for thanksgiving, the sacraments of daily living. Again, that's called Rejoice by Helen Lowry Marshall, and I'm going to sign off now for the day as your host, Teresa Banks of LSEC Radio. If you want to drop me some lines, send me an email anytime at mailtobanks@AOL.com. It's spelled M-A-I-L, the number 2, B as in boy, A-N-K-S, at AOL.com. Become a friend or a follower of this program by going to blogtalkradio.com/LSEC. LSEC is spelled E-L-L-A-C-E-C. And don't forget to swing by Amazon and pick up all four copies of my books, Becoming a Published Author, Barrenhood, Surviving a Layoff, and Woman of Integrity. I hope that this program today has been beneficial to you. May God bless you and keep you and yours safe and sound. Take care until we speak or meet again.